for this Monday, February the 28th. And it's all things political. Get your calls in early. Budget repair bill is on the agenda. First hour of the program. The number for on air is 800-486-8655. This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. Superstar producer Chrissy Pease joining me in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Our other superstar producer is very sick today, and we hope that she gets better soon. Rhonda Fanning. You get so much out of Wisconsin Public Radio, no matter where you listen. I get so much out of it. Today we're asking that you put something back in, and that's money. At WPR, we count on listener contributions to pay for just about everything we do. And your gift now will help keep the programs that you value, including this one, on the air. Make your contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hello, Chrissy.
Good morning, Kathleen. See, last hour, the goal was 70 pledges, and we heard from 68 listeners. Thank you so much for all those pledges. Now, our goal this hour is 55 pledges by 10 o'clock. Meeting this goal helps make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money we need to fund the programs you rely on. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and help us meet this goal.
And in just a moment, we'll be talking to Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Washington Bureau Chief Craig Gilbert, who's been on this story in Madison in a big way. We talk about all things political. We'll look a little bit at the budget in Washington, D.C., but most of our conversation will concentrate on what's been going on in Madison and in other cities throughout the state of Wisconsin. And discussions like this one, I know you know this, but they only happen here on the Ideas Network. We're the only network who's giving you a public opinion, who's giving you a variety of guests put together by Chrissy and Rhonda. They're just superb, and I know that I have found this valuable as Wisconsin goes through this very difficult period. These are only possible because of your financial support. Please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And today only, everyone who pledges will be entered in a drawing for a Kindle ebook reader.
All right.
Yeah, you could be the lucky winner of this gift when you make a pledge of any amount today only at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And you don't have to pledge to participate. To enter without donating, send a postcard with your name, address, and telephone number to WPR Kindle Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Postcards received by March 10th will also be entered in the drawing. You can find all the details on the drawing online, and you can make a pledge, too, at WPR.org.
How many times, I know this has happened to me, it's happened to all of us, that you've been listening to the Ideas Network and you heard something that just stopped you in your tracks, something that was really interesting. See, I think of everything in terms of metaphors after that metaphor to show last week to stop you in your tracks. A metaphor. We strive every day for programs that open your eyes, and Chrissy and Rhonda do a superb job in this regard. These programs engage your brain. They are programs, really, and today's is a case in point, affect your life. This kind of radio happens only with your financial support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And giving really couldn't be simpler, either at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We need your name, contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you like to pay it.
You can use a credit card if you can. It saves both you and WPR time and the price of a stamp. Or sign up for automatic sustaining donations from your bank account. Don't worry, we will not share your personal information with any other organization. Please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Okay, Kathleen, so far we have heard from two listeners.
All right, we're rolling.
We need 53 more by the end of the hour, and I know that everyone's going to enjoy this conversation with Craig Gilbert, and I will leave you to that now.
Thanks, Chrissy. Chrissy Pease, one of our extraordinary producers, Rhonda Fanning, who is ill today, and we hope she gets better soon. will be with us, we hope, tomorrow. They do fantastic work. All right, here we go again. Another weekend. Huge protests in Madison, probably the largest yet, with some 100,000 people. And maybe you saw that there were protests all over the country and in various parts of the state, too, outside Madison. Joining us this hour to give a national spin on this, and he's been following, of course, what's going on in Wisconsin very closely, is Craig Gilbert. Craig is a frequent guest on All Things Political. He is Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We have been absolutely flooded with calls and emails on this issue. So please, I know that you have your thoughts, call in. We have one line open right now at 800-486-8655. Hello, Craig. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning.
Did you think, you know, this is really striking to me, 2 weeks of massive protests in Madison. I don't think you've ever seen anything like this. I certainly haven't. Did you think that we would have reached a point right now where something would have changed, where the Democrats would for some reason have come home, where the governor would have given a little bit in the budget repair bill, where somebody would have given?
Well, it could have happened. I'm not totally shocked that it hasn't happened, because if you think about the politics of it, I mean, it's gotten to a point where there's not a lot of political incentive for either side at this point even to give in, because then they're losing everything. And you know, obviously the most likely way that would have happened was if the governor, when the unions came back and the Democrats came back and signaled that they would be willing to make the economic concessions, if the governor had then said, okay, then let's just put off the debate for now on bargaining and all the union changes I'm proposing. So when he made the decision not to do that, to sort of reject that overture, I mean, that's really been the shaping decision in all of this. And once he did that, it's difficult for him to go back now and undo that decision, because what's changed? I mean, he sort of made all these arguments about why he won't accept their overture, and that hasn't changed. And so he's kind of accumulating this credit nationally from conservatives for taking a hard line, and I don't think he wants to lose that.
Right. And yet, you must on some level, let me take the viewpoint of protesters here for a moment, and from people who would like to go into the teaching profession and people who are becoming perhaps government workers, servants in some way. When you look at, just as a human being, at the size of these protests, at the people who are sleeping night after night in the Capitol building, it must strike you in some way, don't you think? That you
sure,
must think.
Sure, I don't think he was expecting it. I mean, I
right.
think, who could have, obviously.
Right.
I mean, you know, when we found out what he was proposing, it was pretty striking. I mean, to anybody who follows politics, certainly knowing the dynamic, the political dynamics, I mean, to basically, you know, make a proposal that's not just aimed at give backs, but is aimed at fundamentally changing the structure of labor, and obviously a political shot to the heart of the Democratic Party. And because of, you know, for better or for worse, whatever you think about this issue, the role that public employee unions play as part of the Democratic coalition, when one side goes after a major kind of piece of the coalition on the other side, I mean, that is like, you know, you're setting into motion a chain of events. And that's why, you know, he probably shouldn't have been surprised that there was a pretty, you know, vehement reaction on the other side. But what we've seen is extraordinary on any level.
It can't be good for the state for all of this to keep going on. Your paper had an interesting piece yesterday looking at reaction from elected leaders of local governments, and there are some who say this is an infringement on local rights. Let us deal with how we want to govern our municipality, how we want to take care of teachers and our school board. Others are saying, you've really given us some leeway here. Thanks very much. What's with that?
Well, it is so polarizing. I mean, you just don't see issues like this. I mean, we live in a polarized time, obviously. And you do see issues from time to time that are almost toxic come up. I mean, I can remember, you know, and this is a far from perfect analogy, but I can remember when I was still in Milwaukee before I moved to D.C., and I covered the debate over the financing of the new baseball stadium.
Right.
And I had never seen an issue that poisonous, and people were so upset about it. People thought it was being jammed down their throats. It was just, but that was a Milwaukee issue. It wasn't a statewide issue, and it wasn't really a partisan issue. If you remember, I mean, there were Republicans and Democrats on both sides of that issue. It was kind of a geographic issue. The fact that this is so much more broadly framed, that it's so partisan and so ideological, and has such a big kind of political footprint, just raises the stakes, and it makes it, and obviously if you look at what's happening in the legislature, it can't be anything but incredibly destructive to the institution and to, I mean, are Democrats and Republicans in the legislature ever going to want to look each other in the eyes again after this? I don't know.
I know. They're going to need some kind of mediation, some kind of sensitivity training. Don't you think?
It's amazing. And again, you know, it's sort of an interesting question. If you went back and if Scott Walker knew that things would play out this way, you know, I guess you could say if the Democrats knew that they would play out this way. But you know, obviously the initiator of this collision is the governor. And so if you can ask, it's fair to ask if he knew things were going to play out this way, would he have done it and stuck by it? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. What would make, if anything, it's hard to imagine the Democratic senators coming back. I was watching the governor on Meet the Press yesterday, and the head of the Congressional Black Caucus from Missouri was on saying,
right,
there really is no reason, now that they know what would happen once they came back and they know his plan from that made-up phone call, or real phone call where he thought it was David Koch, why would they come back? Because,
well, except for the fact that they can't stay away forever. And then you get to a point where by staying away, you know, what that has consequences. And so you have to think that at some point they have to come back. I mean, they just have to, right? And so when does that happen? And it's so hard, you know, I was talking to somebody last week about, they were saying sort of in international relations terms, I mean, this is what happens when, you know, neither side has an opportunity to compromise without losing face. And so if you're, you know, if you're involved in a diplomatic fight, you always want to give your opponent the chance to, you know, make concessions without looking like they've completely surrendered and lost everything. And that's not happening in this case.
Do the Democrats, before we go to phone calls and we need to soon, we're jammed, need to give something more? They've given on pensions, they've given on health care. Do they need to give something more, offer something more?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's obviously up to them. I mean, I'm sure they feel like they've given a lot. And I don't think they are I don't think they can voluntarily give on the union issues at this point, because there would be a terrible backlash internally from everybody that's been involved in this battle, the unions, the people on the left. I mean, it would just be, they would pay a terrible price for, you know, on their own side for, quote, caving on those issues. I mean, they probably think like they've already given on the economic issues, and what, you know, what more can they do? Now, they can, if they're seen by their own side as simply just, hey, they don't have the votes, they can't keep this up forever, and so, you know, live to fight another day, then they won't suffer an internal backlash. But again, it's sort of, you know, how long can you hold out under these circumstances? Just, you know, the government has to kind of, the wheels have to start turning again at some point.
Let's go to phone calls. Jeff in Sturgeon Bay. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right, Jeff, how are you?
Good.
Good.
What I want to talk about is a part of the bill that's being put forth where the governor's raiding $28 million from the employee trust funds. He talks about how state employees have to pay their fair share, but at the same time, he's going to take $28 million of money that's put in there for our retirement, and I used to be a state employee. And he's going to use that to pay employer portion of group health insurance for state employees for the last 6 months of the year. You know, he talks about fairness, but how is this fair? And I think he's been somewhat disingenuous. He's talking about how we don't pay our fair share of retirement. You know, that was negotiated over years and no pay raises, where the state eventually was paying 100% of it. So I think, you know, he's being hypocritical.
Craig.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, just let me just say up front, our folks in Madison who cover state government know the details of the bill better than I do, and they're probably better equipped to talk about the fine print, not to belittle the issue at all, but they're better equipped to talk about the nuts and bolts on some of this stuff than I am. So, but you know, obviously, in a larger sense, that is the argument. It's one of the arguments that's made against what the governor is proposing is that, you know, you have what's the product of years and decades of bargaining. And so he's saying, okay, not only are we going to kind of undo that, but there's not going to be any more bargaining. So, I mean, that is a pretty far-reaching stratagem. And it's interesting that we haven't seen, even though we've seen a ton of Republican moral support, and obviously Walker is now a major figure to conservatives and a hero to people on the right. Again, you're not seeing a lot of Republicans kind of replicate exactly what he's doing. I mean, people are not there's not a lot of Republican governors who are going as far as Walker has gone on the union changes, and maybe. You know, they're looking at what's happening in Madison and saying, do I really want that? Now, it wouldn't necessarily happen on the same scale in another state, but maybe they're thinking, do I really want that fight in my own state capital?
And yet they are touting, and I've heard his name more this weekend than I have before, Mitch Daniels from Indiana, who has done this. And the Wall Street Journal person, again, on Meet the Press yesterday, was saying that the state has been in the black for some years, and this guy could make a go of it because he's running a state that's doing okay financially.
Yeah, and the one difference with Mitch Daniels, and clearly, yeah, he did some changes he was able to do, I think, by executive order in Indiana that affected collective bargaining. He somehow managed to come across as a more practical kind of figure in all this, partly because he asked Republican members in his own legislature to back off of a sort of right-to-work proposal that they had offered. And he sort of made the argument that, you know, and I heard him again making it, I think, on public radio this morning in an interview, that, you know, we've got this huge problem, this huge math problem, our debt, which he described as a math problem, not an ideological issue. And he said, in order to really tackle it, we're going to need cooperation. We're going to need both sides sort of invested in the solutions. And so he was sort of making the argument that, you know, I'd rather not, you know, fight a nuclear war with the other side where it may not be necessary in order to, if I don't have to solve this problem. David Brooks made a similar argument in the New York Times, the columnist, who's sort of a moderate conservative, I guess you'd call him, who was saying, you know, you need all hands on board, and so why do something, why go further than you have to go and do something that you know is going to be as dispolarizing and divisive if you're going to need everybody kind of involved in dealing with this problem. That's sort of the argument. That's one argument against what Walker is doing, and it's an interesting one.
Yeah. Nate in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, thank you for having me. I would like to say a couple things. First is that I actually support the state senators in Illinois because I see this as the only way they could do a filibuster, and if they could set aside this one contentious bill, they would probably come back and do work on all the other ones that are coming. On top of that, I was actually there, and I see a lot of deceptive stuff. I mean, I don't care if they stay in the Capitol building or not, but I do see deceptive stuff said about the protesters, like the claim they're out of state, because I would be surprised if as few as 9 out of 10 of them were Wisconsinites, because I think the vast majority are. And one possible sort of solution I could see to this is that I think Walker and the union leaders should have a discussion in front of a TV camera where instead of just banning all collective bargaining rights over workplaces, they go through issue by issue what individual items that entails to, so that if one side can provide a good reason for having it that way, then it stays, and if it's not really a defensible idea, then it can go. And that way you don't ban the whole thing, but actually go through and try to do it I would say smartly and maybe reform, but reform in an efficient way that protects a lot of rights.
Mm-hmm. Craig?
Well, I guess it's, you know, maybe, I don't know if this has been suggested or not, but maybe one way to try to break the impasse would be for the governor to say, come back, let's have a debate, and I'll promise not to push the, you know, let's have a, maybe we can carve out a window of a week or two where we can do other business and have a debate about these issues, and I won't, you know, in that window, I won't move these particular changes. Now, that would be one option. I kind of doubt he would do that, because I think his strategy right now is to just try to exert as much pressure as possible on the legislators to come back and then get his, you know, then get the legislature to move what he's proposing. But that would be one, in theory, that would be, might be one way to try to find a short-term resolution. It is kind of like the filibuster, although the filibuster is obviously a Senate rule, and in this case, they're achieving the functional equivalent of a filibuster by basically not being there and not participating and opting out, which is what's driving Republicans crazy.
Well, it seems to me as though he needs some new message, or he's going to lose the national stage, because he is saying essentially the same thing over and over. We need something new. The other thing that does worry me, the long-term consequences of this, Craig, is, you know, I went to a restaurant last night, and the young woman who was waiting on the table said she was studying to be a teacher, and she made it clear that she would not be a teacher in the state of Wisconsin, that she's very upset about this. You know, on a level here, we have a lot of people who work. We're public employees here. Most of us are not union, but nobody here makes very much money. And we have a lot of, everybody has degrees, and a lot of people have master's degrees. And they feel, I can speak for many of them, that they've given in pension and they've given in health care, which was a part of their package, one of the reasons that they worked here, because you got that, you didn't get much money. Now you're going to get very, very little money. What about the workforce? What about people who work, you know, as secretaries in universities and people who are doing all kinds of jobs, public service jobs all over the state? What's the attraction to even go into that kind of work now?
Well, that's all part of the debate, right? I mean, and that's what, one of the things that makes it so pointed and visceral too, is that on the one hand, you've got people on one side of the debate who feel like they're being kind of targeted, and they feel like, as you've just laid out, that there's, you know, that they've made their own kind of sacrifices. These are the trade-offs. This was the deal when I became a public employee, that, you know, if I've got a degree or an advanced degree, I could have made more money in the private sector, but I get more security and benefits way, and the rewards of doing public service, et cetera. On the other side, obviously, you've got people that believe that, either sort of ideologically believe that there's something wrong in this equation in terms of the power of the unions, or more viscerally believe that, because of what's happened in the private sector, that these people have benefits that I don't have and I'm paying for them. So right. It gets so personal. And we had a piece in the paper the other day about one of our reporters, Rick Rommel, who went out and talked to people in bars and on sidewalks, and just it's so personal. I mean, it's so personal, and so and it's just splitting people apart.
Well, now my Irish is getting up, but what about the people who started all of this, the crooks on Wall Street who deceived people and took their money and walked away with millions and got bonuses for billions? Why isn't there a lot more anger toward that segment who got us into a lot of this trouble, Craig?
Well, I think it is one reason why this debate has kind of taken on the dimensions that it's taken on is because it taps into all these other issues for both sides.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
You know, very quickly you get, if you're on one side of the issue, you very quickly get from what Walker's proposing to income inequality, to unchecked corporate power, to assault on the unions. If you're on the other side of the issue, you very quickly get from what Walker's proposing to untamed, bloated, out-of-control government and, collusion between the unions and the Democratic Party and government. And so it just immediately, rockets off into these kind of front and center issues, even though, you know, we haven't had an open front, you know, kind of front burner public debate about public employee unions, really. I mean, it's been there, but it hasn't been a front and center issue in recent years. But it taps into all these other issues.
Exactly. Very, very well said. Craig Gilbert is our guest, and he is Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We'll take many more of your phone calls in just a moment. We are in a pledge drive, and we'll tell you more about that. But let me give you the number in case you want to pledge right now, 888-202-2552. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Wisconsin Public Radio's Winter Membership Drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and Chrissy Pease, one of our wonderful producers of this program, is joining me in our Milwaukee studios. The goal of this campaign is simple: to raise the funds that we need to pay for the programs you listen to. Because you value public radio, please, please take care of public radio. Do your part by contributing now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hi, Chrissy.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, everyone. We're looking for 37 more pledges in the next 27 minutes or so. Thank you so much if you've already given, and if not, why don't you help us stay on track by making your contribution right now. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You get a lot of perspectives on lots of topics. Just think of the perspectives you've had on this particular issue. We've talked with Republican senators, Democratic senators, people in the business world. We've talked with people from the Tea Party. We've talked with top-notch reporters. We've talked with so many people. Tomorrow we'll talk with one of our favorite tax experts. There's so much interest in this, Chrissy, that we post some of these on Facebook, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and the number of comments is just incredible. I haven't seen anything like this. So we are a forum for public opinion on this very important issue. Today, all pledges, WPR.org or 888-202, will also be entered in a drawing. You can find out details about a Kindle drawing at WPR.org. And please make your pledge, please make your pledge, while you're there.
And while we're, you know, getting updates on things that are going on, we get comments sometimes, and they really, I think, sustain us. And Karen from Oconomowoc pledged, and she said, "Your topics are always so interesting, and I have learned so much. I put great value on your station and decided it was time to contribute to all your hard work. Thank you over and over every day." And I think, Kathleen, that's kind of what you were talking about, the hard work that we do put in and bringing different guests on, you know, kind of the same topic, but so many different perspectives, like you said. So if you value it, like Karen from Oconomowoc did, please go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And becoming a sustaining member to WPR is a gift that keeps on giving. Your membership will never expire if you become a sustaining member. And we ask you to do that. Give now, please, WPR.org or 888, did I say that? 888-202-2552. Chrissy, thank you very much for all the work that you do. And we go back to phone calls, and let's go next to Robert from La Crosse. Hi, Robert.
Hi, hello.
Hi.
I'm calling about, can you hear me okay?
I sure can.
Yes, I'm calling about the spin that's been taken on local governments who have been settling contracts at a feverish rate here in Wisconsin in order to protect their local employees from this legislation. And that's been spun as the unions trying to pressure the local governments. Although living here in La Crosse, what we find is that our county elected officials wanted to protect the employees from this bill if it did in fact pass. And the other comment I wanted to make was that the news media doesn't seem to be covering a lot of the other issues that are involved in this bill, such as the power plants in
right.
the university system.
Yeah, I think you're right. There are many other issues in this. Craig?
Well, that's a fair point, and there are some issues that haven't gotten as much attention as they probably should get. I'll be honest with you, and then a story like this is overwhelms the media. I mean, it's sort of, and one of the things that happens when a story like this comes along on the national level, of course, is that it sort of you know, it kind of takes over, and a lot of other things go uncovered. And obviously the national coverage is imperfect, as it always will be, in terms of what's going on in Wisconsin. You notice, you know, people as if, you know, whenever you have sort of, you know, if you know what's going on in Wisconsin, you listen to a lot of the national commentary, you'll hear things from time to time that you know are not true.
Right.
Or kind of off. And that would, I'm sure, be true from whatever your political perspective is. And within the state, it's also consuming. And even within the sphere of this one issue, there are issues, as the caller mentioned, that probably aren't getting as much attention as they might otherwise. It's a scramble to just keep up with everything that's going on. You know, we're sort of a partner with this national fact-checking operation called PolitiFact, and it started during the campaign when it's a fast and furious operation to keep up with what the candidates are saying and try to check facts. And we get a lot of questions from readers about, I heard this, is this true? But this is even more intense than the campaign, because this debate is unfolding in real time. It's lots of claims are being made, and you know, the caller brought up the issue of what's happening with local contracts, and I find myself, you know, in Washington, D.C., when I hear issues like that, there are things you hear that you don't have time yourself
to check out,
and you want to know the answers to yourself, and hopefully these are all things that our paper can get to in a reasonable amount of time, but it is overwhelming, and not everything gets addressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is overwhelming. And then tomorrow you get the budget. Talk about being overwhelmed.
Yeah, and then here in D.C., we've got a little thing called a
potential
government shutdown.
Exactly.
Which probably looks like it's going to be averted in the short run, but then it's going to come up again and again in the coming weeks, the debt ceiling issue. I mean, it's really playing out in a way. It's sort of like, to me, the people nationally are, and maybe this will influence the Washington debate in a healthy way, but people nationally are getting a taste of this kind of Armageddon scenario where everything just breaks down and there's an impasse and it's just ugly and dysfunctional, and maybe that whets the appetite of people at the national level to avoid this kind of outcome in Washington.
Mm-hmm. We go from one extreme to another, don't we? I can remember not very long ago, Craig, doing really heartfelt shows after the shooting of Congresswoman Giffords and all of the people who died there, and this real heartfelt response on the part of so many members of Congress. They were sitting next to each other. They were being considerate of each other. Well, that lasted how long? 2 weeks? 3 weeks?
Well, yeah. It's the pace. Obviously, we live in interesting times, and we live in an information landscape where things happen very quickly, and we go through these cycles of news and stuff happens. It's consuming. It consumes us, and then we forget about it. It's kind of dizzying. It's dizzying, I think, for people who are consuming information. It's dizzying for people that are producing information. And it's sort of part of the dynamics in all this. Sometimes it's a little hard to sort out, but clearly one of the reasons why this, what's playing out in Madison, sort of feels different than anything we can remember in the past is because we live in a different world when it comes to information and media.
Right. Thanks, Robert. Let's go to Scott in Madison next. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I had two questions as well. The first one, I've noticed a little coverage today about the fact that the protesters were asked to leave, were going to be forced to leave last night and then stayed. And what I haven't heard anybody report on is the fact that the legislature, as far as I understand it, passed a ruling that they had to leave. And originally it was going to be Friday night, then it was going to be Saturday night, then it was going to be last night. And each time somebody didn't follow through. Last night, it was the fact that the police did not want to remove peaceful protesters, peaceful people stating their case. And so, to me, that's an indication, and having been there 7-8 times in the last 2 weeks, the police are extremely friendly with the extremely friendly protesters from the state of Wisconsin, where they are all from. And I have a feeling that the backing that the governor thinks he has from his police force that he gave a break on these issues is actually not there. But I haven't heard a lot with that.
Well, I mean, that has been covered to some degree. Clearly, the firefighters and the police who were exempted have been participating in protests and kind of showing their, quote, solidarity with other unions. So that's happened. I mean, whether, you know, going forward, this you know, what it means for the support of those unions, you know, whether Scott Walker is going to get that support next time he runs, you'll have to ask the unions. But again, you know, the caller mentioned the sort of relationship between the police and the protesters. And again, we all think back to the last time there were protests on this, anything like this scale, was the Vietnam War. And that was, again, a very different, obviously incredibly adversarial dynamic between the police and the protesters. And here you've not only got, you know, an angry but pretty peaceful protest movement, but you've also got the police in Madison kind of in many cases in sympathy with the protesters, which just makes it a really interesting situation.
There have been, and I know that you know about this, ideas that this is part of a national campaign to bust unions because they're a major support of the Democratic Party in terms of organizational support and financial support of the Democratic Party. Two questions coming from that. A, do you think it is part of a national movement to do just that? And B, if this is successful in the state of Wisconsin, what impact will that have on upcoming elections, because unions won't have nearly the amount of power that they had in the state of Wisconsin?
Well, let me take the second part of the question first, and I think it's a very interesting question, because you could see it playing out one of two different ways. I mean, on the one hand, it could play out that he's energized and activated the left and labor in a way that will come back to haunt him, because these were people that were clearly not as energized as Republican voters in 2010, and now in 2012 they're going to be really jacked up, and that would be not good for Republicans. That's one scenario, one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is if you're kind of sticking a dagger into the heart of public employee unions and depowering them in a way, then you sort of accomplished an important Republican goal, and you've made it, you've really kind of kicked out one foundation, a political foundation or financial foundation for the Democratic Party in a way that could help Republicans, could depress turnout if unions can't organize the way they could in the past. So you can sort of see either thing happening. So that's one thing. On the conservative agenda regarding labor unions, you know, we don't know inside the councils of the governor exactly how all that played out. But I think it's clear that one of the interesting things about this whole thing, another interesting thing about this whole thing, is that the governor, you know, has been pretty disciplined about trying to frame this as a budget issue more than a union rights
or working
rights issue. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people, a lot of conservatives and some Republicans who are happy to frame it as want to have that debate and are happy to frame it as a union rights issue because they think it's the issue. And so that's it's just been fascinating to watch that part of it, because Scott Walker doesn't really want to have that debate because he wants it to be focused on the budget. But you've also got people in the conservative movement who want to have that debate and have wanted to have that debate and think they can win that debate. So there has been a predicate that's been laid to some degree on the right for the argument that public employee unions are too powerful, that they're different from private employee unions, and that they've kind of, we've created this situation where we're making unkeepable promises in pensions and healthcare benefits. And you can go back and look at the sort of seeds of that argument. And again, whether it's, you know, how that, the connection between that and what Scott Walker decided to do is sort of, I can't speak to, because I don't know what's been said. But there is a broader context.
Craig Gilbert, Washington Bureau Chief of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, our guest for All Things Political. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. We also have a pretty lively debate going on our Facebook page, too, and that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And our next caller is John in Appleton. Hi, John.
Yes. As Mr. Gilbert mentioned, that they're trying to reframe this as a budget issue, and one of the things that puts a lie to that that's particularly affects us here in the Fox Valley is that we would lose $2.5 million out of our $8.5 million budget for Valley Transit. I mean, 500,000 rides last year on the bus system were people going to and from work. And I mean, statewide, this is, we're talking about $46 million that would be lost in federal aid because of the changes to labor agreements here. And, I mean, it's just like, what were they thinking? And our local representative, Penny Bernard-Shaber, introduced an amendment in the Assembly to solve this problem, but the majority just voted it down. It's like they don't want to, why would they not make such even a reasonable concession? I'm just stuttering here because this is not after watching the King's Speech.
No, but, I'm glad it won, aren't you? It was great.
what are they thinking to be so? And the way they pulled off the vote in the Assembly, it seemed completely pointless, just as a way of goading the other side to close it so that these people could not even cast their no vote.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably another aspect of this debate that hasn't gotten as much attention as
exactly.
It might have. I do think that, you know, Republicans would say the Democrats overreached, you know, in Washington under Obama. Democrats certainly feel Republicans are overreaching now. If you do talk, when you talk to Republicans now, a lot of Republicans do feel like they were elected not to compromise. I mean, they are basically, for the context, the political context for them is the 2010 elections, and they believe that they were sent here and elected here by a constituency that doesn't want them to make deals and doesn't really want them to compromise very much, that wants them to push as hard as they possibly can. And so I think that's part of the political reality here, and that's one reason why, you know, the prospects for resolution and, you know, common ground appear so dim.
Mm-hmm. Are you still there, John? I wanted to tell John to... I was in Appleton, actually, on Saturday. And if you don't know, Anna and John McGinnis from Donegal, you got to meet them. They're in Appleton, and they will make your St. Patrick's Day celebration. They're fabulous. We're going to ask John to do a poem for us, actually, on St. Patrick's Day. Well, what's going to happen this week, Craig?
Things could come to a head. We've said that before. You've got all sorts of, you know, subplots. You've got the people sleeping over in the state capitol. You've got the governor wanting to give his budget address. You've got the Democrats still in Illinois. You've got the questions about the, you know, the deadlines for doing, you know, certain things to save money with refinancing the state's obligations. I mean, it's going to be another week on the big stage for Wisconsin.
And then you got the Middle East, for heaven's sake.
And we keep getting that juxtaposition of the Middle East and the Middle West, which everybody finds irresistible. And I'm not sure what that means, but it's been. I think in a weird way, that's been one reason why this thing has gotten the attention.
I think you're right,
because of what's happening in the Middle East.
I think you're right. Well, I think you're a fine analyst. Thank you, Craig.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Craig Gilbert, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We are, as you know, listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is our all-important winter membership drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Chrissy Pease, one of our extraordinary producers, joining me here in downtown Milwaukee, here today to raise money in support of the programs that you enjoy on this station. Sometimes they make you mad. Sometimes they get you going, you know, and sometimes they just send you to, I've been trying to gobble up as much information as I can on all these issues the last week. It's 24-hour-a-day job, but I got to sleep too. So we try to do some of that for you to get you the right people so we can discuss all of these issues together. Please make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. The amount up to you. We appreciate every donation because every dollar you give makes a difference. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hi, Chrissy.
Hello, Kathleen. We're doing really well this hour. We've got 40 pledges so far.
Great.
We're looking for 15 more in the next 8 minutes or so. So pledges like yours, these ones we've gotten, keep us on track to support the programs you count on. Thank you so much, if you've already given, really sincerely. But if not, why don't you give now? WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You, I know, have been enjoying the conversation with Craig Gilbert. He's a fine analyst about all things political. He's joining us from Washington, D.C., where he also has a national perspective on what's going on in Wisconsin. He's a fine guest and our all things political guest. This is my favorite hour of the week, in case you haven't known that. I love politics. I like to mix it up with all kinds of viewpoints. And it's an important hour. Please take a few minutes to make this hour and many hours to come possible. Put a value on the programs that you enjoy every day and make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Kathleen, we've got something really exciting, and it's today only.
Oh.
Yes. Everyone who pledges will be entered into a drawing for a Kindle ebook reader.
All right.
Read lots of the books we talk about on this show on your Kindle, perhaps. I don't have one, but someone will after today's drawing. You could be the lucky winner of this gift when you make a pledge of any amount today only at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You don't have to pledge to participate, although we would like you to. To enter without drawing, you can send a postcard with your name, address, and telephone number to WPR Kindle Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706 is the zip there. Postcards received by March 10th will also be entered into the drawing. You can find all the drawing details, and you can make a pledge, too, at WPR.org.
I just find it comprehensive and a good mix of news from around the world and local news, the news about the things and the people that I know. I think that Wisconsin Public Radio is one of the most special things about this very special state. I'm Ann Katz, Wisconsin Public Radio Association board member from Madison. Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for news, knowledge, connections, and community.
I'm Kathleen Dunn with Chrissy Pease, and we're here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're just heartened to know that we had 24 new pledges last hour, which shows that there are a lot of people. When there's a big story, we get new people who find that this is a place to have civilized and intelligent conversation about big issues. So that's terrific. Thanks. And we are 14 pledges away from our goal of... What is our goal, Chrissy?
55 this hour.
All right. So please make your donation in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you decide the amount of your pledge. Just go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to support non-commercial radio. If you can, consider a gift of $1,000 or more.
That would be wonderful. Your gift of $1,000, about $83 a month, will help pay for those who can't afford to support WPR right now. And we know you're there. It's a rough time. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 right now with your pledge of any amount.
And Kathleen, as one of the producers of this show with Rhonda, who, like we've said, is ill and we wish her well right now and a speedy recovery, but I get the pleasure of listening to the show every day. And as the call screener and the email screener, I hear from the listeners and I hear how much they value you and what you do and, you know, the questions you ask and the guests we have on. And, you know, I can say that it's really a pleasure every day to come to work with you and with Rhonda. And I think that what listeners really appreciate and what drives them to the show is really you have this great intellectual curiosity that just drives the show and so many interesting topics and you have so many interesting takes and guests. And I hear that from people. And I think that if you love the show like we all do and we love public radio, please show your support with a pledge. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Thank you very much, Chrissy. And it's true, too. No slavery, no civil war, no great producers, no great shows. So thank you very much for all that you do.
I think we one do. Way of looking at it, I guess.
We do. We're proud of what we do. We
certainly.
Have, you know, I love coming to work too. It's great. We have terrific. Next hour, it's old dogs. Oh my gosh, I read the book and cried with my old dog next to me. And today, it's all things political and important programs, important discussions. Please call with your pledge now. Again, it's 888-202-2552. And you can check out information about all your favorite shows or guests you've heard at WPR.org. Audio archives of past programs. And we should tell you that your pledge actually supports all of those services as well.
Sure. And another thing you can do at WPR.org is make your donation. Do it now, WPR.org, or you can call 888-202-2552.
Your financial support helps pay the bills that come with quality public radio. Help with these costs. Make your donation, please, at WPR.org. .org or 888-202-2552.
And a lot of people ask, what does making a pledge mean? A pledge is a promise. We pledge to bring you great shows every day. You pledge to support them with a contribution in any amount.
Thank you so much. Donate now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We need two calls to make our goal for this hour. And this is one of those hours you want to make your goals for. All kinds of reasons. You know what I mean. Thank you, Chrissy.
Thank you,
Chrissy Pease. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning. Please get better, Rhonda. She's under the weather. She's got the flu, so we hope it flies away soon. Thank you, Rhonda, for producing this hour. Thank you, Chrissy, for doing on-air production and helping with Pledge. And thank you for really all of you for you make this show. It's the guests. It's you, too. Thank you so much for being a part of the discussion.